Thanks.
All right, we are back on the record. And I think the first thing we were going to do is make a motion about whether to send it back. So, okay. Someone want to do that? Or you want me to do that?
Does the board have to reopen from executive session on the record? Oh, yeah. Or?
Sure, we're back in session.
Okay.
It's 12:35. You want to go ahead?
Sure. I will make a motion that the title board conclude that we do not have authority or jurisdiction to send the fiscal impact statement or abstract back to legislative council, and that our only authority under the statute is to modify the abstract based on information presented at the rehearing.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That pivotal moment. that takes us back to the abstract itself. And so I think I'll start because I think we had a few minutes to think about it over lunch. And I'm not comfortable putting numbers in, Mr. Dunn, except numbers that I can pull out of the fiscal impact statement, because we had some testimony that this was an old study, and we had some testimony that the land mass has changed, and so I'm not ready to go that far. But in the initial fiscal impact statement, it does have the language about currently the 500-foot setback prohibits on about 18 acres surrounding a given point, and the 1,000 prohibits developments on 72 acres. And 2,500 will be 450 surrounding acres. So I think I'm okay taking the 500 foot that it is now, and then the 2,500 feet, and putting that in an acreage calculation for the abstract. And I think I'm probably okay doing some of these things in the language that Mr. Dunn submitted that I don't think are dependent upon the age of the study. So I wanted to call back up, if he's still here. Did he leave?
He is. Let me get him here. Okay.
Mr. Brown is in the back here.
Oh, okay. Can you come back up? So in terms of, did you have the language that Mr. Dunn submitted about what he thought?
I don't believe so.
Well, let me just walk you through some of the statements. And I mean, you're pretty familiar with the study. Were you part of the team conducting the study, or?
No, I previously worked for a firm that built the economic simulation model that was used. So they were a client of mine at the time, but I did not work for them directly. So
okay. But you're familiar with what's in the study?
More or less.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the conversation that we had about the 90.2% reduction, would you agree that that number is going to change based on the fact that there's no federal land in our current initiative?
Yeah, so I was trying to read through that. So that figure again came from COGCC directly,
right.
And I was trying to read through what exactly that said in their report. My understanding is that directly references all surface land, and I couldn't find any specific mention of whether it was designated as federal or not.
Okay.
I forget what your question was, but so my understanding is that includes all surface land throughout the entire state, which would include existing federal
land. Okay. What about this statement where it says the study estimated that because oil wells typically record the greatest volume, where that sentence about the 42%. The first year, 24, the second, 18, the third. Is that number going to have changed over time, or is that just a
New production constant? Would deplete total production at a rate of 42%. So new production would deplete total production rate of 40% in the first year. New production would deplete total.
Maybe one way to ask that is that are those numbers dependent on the 90.2% number?
I think that's not a technology. That's not an individual well. So it's not based upon the technology. That's based upon the total production. So the land would matter, the okay. land amount, and the current amount of investment that's happening would also dictate that percentage. So
okay.
That's not like this well would be depleted at 42% is the sort of average amount of production. That's my understanding of it. The 42 and 20, yeah, so that's the amount of actually reduction in the total production in the state as a result of this. So to the extent that some of this production would be able to be permitted and moved to federal land, those percentages might change.
Okay, and then is that true of the next sentence too, then I'm assuming? Natural gas well production would deplete at a rate of 17% in the first right. year. That's dependent on the land.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Sure, you can come. But so I guess, Mr. Dunn, you know where I'm going, which is, I mean, if there are parts of the study that aren't dependent on that, then I'd probably be willing to refer to the study and change some of the language. But short of that, I think, you know, I'm comfortable bringing in things from the fiscal impact statement, but right. I don't know.
So I was getting educated a little bit over lunch on some of these issues, and there is someone here who's admittedly from the industry, but who knows more about a lot of these permitting issues than I do or probably anybody else here. And if you would like them to come up, they're reluctantly willing to. So as I learned over lunch, even when drilling operations are on federal land, you still have to get a state permit. So in essence, any regulations on state permitting, now there are constitutional preemption issues there that aren't relevant here, but putting that aside, a state permit, as I understand it, is required for drilling on federal land. And so therefore then the setback requirement in theory on state law would affect that. You can't drill on federal land without that permit, as I understand it. So I think the 90.2 number is still valid. And the other point I'd make is that whether you're looking at number 78, initiative number 78 from 2 years ago, or this one, neither one discusses that federal lands piece. So the analysis was done on a state as a whole, and it still applies.
So as I look, and I'm sure that's what Ms. Tierney is standing up to say, but if you look at the proposed initiative under Section 3, where it establishes the 2,500-foot setback, it says, the people of the state of Colorado hereby establish that all new oil and gas development not on federal land must be located at least 2,500 feet from an occupied structure.
Right, but as I think you asked about the depletion curves, right? You have existing operations that are essentially going to deplete rapidly, existing wells, right? And then you'll have no new wells, arguably, in our view, coming on, available to come online. And so you can say that the acreage covered by the measure will have X result because of both the depletion of existing wells and then the essentially elimination of new wells.
But wouldn't this exclude, I mean, the setback, as I read it, would only go up to the border of federal land and would not prohibit any new oil and gas development on federal land?
Well, yeah, I think that's a question for the proponents about whether or not
they would. I mean, that's what the measure says. So even if you had to pull a permit, I mean, you could be whatever, 600 feet from an occupied structure on federal land, and you'd still qualify for the permit under this initiative because the initiative only bans.
Right, okay.
They're right, not, and that's how I read it, is the state or the local government could not deny you the permit on federal land just because you were within the 2,500 foot
Right, okay.
Radius.
Yeah.
Okay. If Ms. Tierney's nodding her head yes for the record. we'll.
So, I mean, I guess my concern is then that does change the number because there's probably some occupied structures that are within 2,500 feet of the entrance to federal land, but you could still drill on that federal land. And so then these numbers become not entirely reliable. And if all of the numbers are dependent on the calculation from the last initiative, then it's hard to do much. Now, I think that saying that it's speculative that it will result, I think Mr. Gallander already probably addressed some of that, that I think we know it will. It's not a maybe. So we could be a little stronger in the language in the abstract, and we could certainly put in like some of this language about the impact to revenues.
One of the things I think, I don't know what you do with it, but I believe it's in the report, Weld County, where I think 85% of the production occurs, there's no federal land in Weld County. So in terms of calculating losses, you know, the federal piece is not really an issue up there.
Well, and I mean, I understand that. I think we are a little hamstrung by our lack of, I don't know, knowledge in this area. I'm happy to go through, you know, some of the things in the fiscal impact statement and move some of these to the abstract and, you know, I don't think I would have an issue maybe being a little bit more explicit about the impact.
Madam Chair, could I address one other issue, and that's that, may I?
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you. It seems as though we are needing to make a little bit more of a record about what our data is. So one of the proponents, Suzanne Spiegel, is here, and she is an expert on this area. In this area, and if I could get your indulgence, she could talk a little bit about the counters to what are in the data that is being presented to you by the objector, so that there is a record.
Okay.
I think this is Jason Dunn. I would object to that. I think we're getting into sort of battling testimony. The reports are in the record because they were submitted to legislative counsel. I don't think there's anything in the statute that allows for new testimony or new evidence to be presented sort of sua sponte at the hearing. I know it says that you can only consider in redrafting the abstract information presented at the rehearing, but I don't think that means new information. This can't turn into a fact-finding expedition.
Well, I think it kind of has to. I mean, I think you can make that argument, but and if the Supreme Court wants to say we can't, then that'll be helpful to know for the future. But
maybe if Ms. Tierney could give us just a little, not an offer of proof, but just a description of what generally the proponent would be talking about.
Well, let me say two things. One is Mr. Dunn's been very clear that he is going to argue before the Supreme Court, I believe, that the only thing you can take into account is what is presented here. And while we presented all sorts of data to the Legislative Council, you don't have that data. So I feel like I need to make a record of some of the stuff that we presented. It will be short, but Ms. Spiegel has a lot of information. For example, one of the things that you just were raising, Madam Chair, is what will the reduction in production be as a result of the new setback? And what Ms. Spiegel could talk about is that with the fracking technology available, the setback may require you to move your well, but you can drill straight down and then sideways to extract the mineral rights that are much closer than the setback, than where your wellhead needs to be. So you can't really say that the reduction in the extraction equal to the reduction in the available land mass in which to stick a wellhead, because the technology is there to get that mineral out, even if you have to move the wellhead to a different location.
So that, are you saying that the 2,500 feet only governs on the surface and would not prohibit drilling underneath the 2,500?
I would really like to have Ms. Spiegel talk to that, because I am not an expert in well drilling.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'll just start with, you guys kind of touched on it, but about how much is produced in the first year specifically. So I've been paying attention to the trends in the oil and gas industry. One of the biggest indicators of how much drilling happens from one year to the next is simply oil and gas prices. So it's really hard to predict once this happens, how much drilling will happen. The economics of this industry, they're really close. You know, when oil and gas prices go up, production tends to be directly impacted by that. You can see in 2014, drilling came to a standstill in a lot of our communities. When the moratoria lifted in communities, the reason they didn't start drilling was just because oil and gas prices were still low. So since those prices have started to go back up, that's why we're starting to see more permits now. That's probably the number one indicator about what's gonna determine the quantity of drilling in the future. So I think it's
Give us your background for where you're formulating these opinions, because I don't really know anything about
I've been working with many different advocacy groups since 2012. So I'm a board member of Resilient Communities Network. I'm an advisory member to Colorado Rising. I work with FREC Free Colorado since 2012. So this has been like a full-time job for me since 2012, tracking studies, tracking the economics.
Do you have an economic background?
I did study international affairs and economics in at university level.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's just one piece to consider. I mean, it's kind of common sense that the price of oil and gas is going to impact the how much they're drilling. So I just want to point that out, because that's going to play, it's going to have some impact. The other thing is, you're right that you asked the question if our measure impacts all of oil and gas development, and it does. But the thing is that these pools of mineral rights, they're pools. So you can access mineral rights, right, like traveling underground. So we don't know how much they're going to be able to suck out from 2,500 feet, if it's just what's underneath the ground or not. Does that make sense? That's why they're with, have you ever heard of force pooling? Yeah. So with force pooling, the reason that they're able to force pool is that you can access other people's mineral rights beyond what's just below the surface. And so if those mineral rights are part of one pool, they might be able to access more than what's just underneath the land that they have access to. So we can't predict exactly how much they're going to be able to extract. So it's just, I just wanted to point that out, because I think trying to come up with those numbers is really tricky. Yeah.
Right, but we can come up with a range. You don't think we can even come up with a range?
A range for what specifically?
For the impact. It doesn't have to be an exact number.
Well, I mean, if we're going to do that, then we have to look at, I think, a number of other factors, because there's so many factors that we should be considering on every end of this, you know, so we...
Well, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, are you saying it cannot be done, or are you saying don't have time?
I'm just saying that to try to squeeze it in right now to come up with a number makes me a little nervous, because it seems really complex. So.
Okay. Anyone have any other questions?
I don't know if you're the right one to ask, but I do wonder if you have any information to offer regarding the statement in the abstract about effects on property values and health.
I do have some information on that. Like, you want, like, what study that is coming from, or?
I guess just if there's Well, I guess, are there studies or has it been quantified or is there anything that you can tell us about that statement on preserving property values for homeowners and improving health outcomes for affected residents?
Yeah, and if you want to add anything to what I'm saying, I know you have some access to those studies. But we did submit some studies, and like, so there's several, but one I can cite is a Duke University study that found that homes that were within a little bit less than a mile of oil and gas development that depended on well water, that their home values declined by an average of 30% because of, regardless of if there was damage or not, just because of the perceived threat to the water. And then they go on, and there's other impacts too, but that's one study that I would look at for this.
Was that a study of Colorado? Or
I think it was across the board. I think they looked at a variety. So it wasn't just specifically Colorado. I don't know if they've done a study yet specific just to Colorado. And then there's a number of health studies that have come out even just recently that, you know, indicate that there's some major – did we submit economic – I don't know if there's any economic argument specifically. But it just shows that on a large scale that people's health is being impacted in a significant way. So, for example, there was a study that was done by Princeton University that looks at 1.1 million babies and found that people living within about 3/4 of a mile were likely to have 25% more likely to have babies with lower birth weights and lower birth health indexes, more likely for sickness in the future. So common sense says that these type of issues have a cost associated with them. And so that's why we can't give numbers, but just, sure. Yeah.
Did any of those studies specifically discuss the difference between a 500-foot and a 2,500-foot difference in distance?
They did. I mean, so the way that study looked at it was the closer that that they got, the worse the impacts were. So they did delineate between, like, at a mile, it's not as severe as at, like, 3/4 of a mile or 1/2 of a mile. So, yes, they do go into specifically, you know, that the impacts are more grave as the distance is less.
Okay.
And then another one that is, I think, very relevant to Colorado is the Lisa McKenzie study that looked specifically, it's actually like a big reason we chose 2,500 feet is because the Lisa McKenzie study cites that within a 1/2 mile, the health impacts are the most grave, and 2,500 feet is very close to a 1/2 mile.
And I have one follow-up question. When you talk about the process where you go underground, so is it not the intent of this measure to include that type of activity in the definition of an oil and gas development facility?
I mean, it is. It is the intent that, you know, it's all oil and gas.
Okay, well, you're banning oil and gas facilities within 2,500 feet.
Right.
And oil and gas facility is defined including underground injection wells. So
right.
What I'm trying to figure out is what you talked about where you can go underground and you can't say it's 2,500 feet. Is that part of the facility, or is that not part of the facility?
So two things. So an injection well is a little different. Injection wells where they take produced water and they...
Right. So that's not part of the facility.
No, it is. I'm just saying that an injection well is a little bit different than the vertical drilling, the horizontal drilling. Injection well is just where they re-inject the produced
right.
water.
But what you described earlier...
Okay, so, yeah.
Is that a part of that activity that's happening underground?
It is. But what all I was saying is that sometimes when they go underground into a pool, they may be able to access more than what is just right underneath that piece of land. That's all I'm saying.
But they can't do it within 2,500 feet.
But they may still be able to access a pool of shale that's beyond, because it creates fractures in the rock, and then that goes out when they send down the hydraulic fluid and creates fractures. All I'm saying is that even if they're not in that land, that pool could be drawing from a larger pool.
If I may, I think is what you're asking is if you say there's an occupied structure here. You drill a well 3,000 feet from the occupied structure. Are you allowed to go underneath the occupied structure 5,000 feet underground and pull stuff or not under the measure? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
And I'm saying the intent of the measure is to stop all oil and gas drilling in dangers from 2,500 feet from structures.
So the answer is no, you would not be allowed to send those pipes underneath the structure, but underground. It's not just a surface ban. That's the question we're trying to get answered.
I think there was just some confusion in the question. I think I might have contributed to that, so I apologize. I think what the answer is, you cannot go horizontal within the 2,500 feet, but that oil and gas is liquid and it pools. And so you might be able to go straight down, and the activity that you're doing straight down might draw from.
And I don't want to get too far afield, but is the 2,500 feet just like lines on the surface, or is it a sphere? Meaning, if you're down more than 2,500 feet below the surface, can you go anywhere? Does that make sense?
I think they're saying no.
I need to confer on that one.
And maybe it's a question of how the 500 foot is applied.
Well, they redefined.
Yeah. And again, I may be getting a little far afield, just trying to understand the measure.
The intent has got to be to run into the surface and those feel like columns. Mm-hmm. Seems
like. Sorry, I'm not trying to derail us with that question. That may be getting kind of far afield.
No, but
from what
I think it's something that we need
abstract
to clear up. So I want to make sure that I. Could we have like 1 minute?
I don't even know if it's that important of a question here for what we're trying to figure out with the abstract. It was just my.
There is some disagreement amongst my team here about whether or not I answered the last question correctly about whether or not the horizontal drilling could go closer than 2,500 feet, and I would really like to clear that point up.
Well, if it's horizontal, isn't it the same as the well above it? Oh, no, you're talking. Okay.
Way vertical. Down underneath. And then it goes to your question, is does it need to be 2,500, 2,600 feet, 2,501 feet? Or?
And that may just be idle speculation. I don't know that it matters for what we're trying to do.
Okay, maybe not.
In figuring out the abstract. Yeah, okay. That would have to do with how it's interpreted. And
right. Fair enough.
All right. Well, Mr. Dunn, do you want to add anything else?
This is really unprecedented. I've never really seen anything like this in all my years of title board. It's turning into some sort of trial. If this were a courtroom and Ms. Spiegel had got up to testify, I would ask the court to disqualify her as an expert. And the flip side of that is, I suppose I could call a bunch of engineers up here to talk about, and we could turn into, hydrology and oil and gas expert symposium. But I don't think that's the role of the title board. And I think we're just wandering way afield of what type of testimony we should be presenting and taking here, and what you all should be considering. No, you're making great grounds for appeal, but it's fairly stunning to me that we are wandering as far afield as we are.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is just a question I have. With our discussion of the age of the CU study, the fact that it doesn't appear to exclude federal land, whereas the measure appears to, are there any numbers from that study that you think would be relevant to be included in the abstract and that we, as the title board, could feel comfortable including? And obviously the way I phrase the question, I'm leaning no, but.
I think you could rely on the jobs data. I think you could rely on some of the personal income impact. But I think more the point is that, as has been talked about somewhat, your role is not to come up with a number, a precise number, and put it in. It's okay to say in the abstract, you know, a study, you could even say a study that considered federal lands found the following impacts. You can say that this measure apparently precludes or excludes federal lands in terms of the setback. I think there's a variety of ways to say it, to describe it, and leave that ambiguity in there, or you know, use ranges and qualifying terms beyond just saying, I think, as Ms. Steyer pointed out, that it's not enough to say, well, there may be some job loss. We all know that's not the case. And so I think we need to be more definitive of that, but you don't have to be so definitive as to, you know a precise number.
I promise this will be my last statement. If I can, I just did want to clear up the record. The measure is not intended to preclude horizontal drilling under the surface. It is only intended to preclude where the well site, the development site, is.
Okay. That's helpful. All right. Well, I think when it comes to the impact statement, we could probably pretty easily do some more definitive language, like with state and local government revenue. We could say the measure will decrease the amount. Under economic impact, we could strike thus potentially and just say reduces future oil and gas. And rather than to the extent that the measure reduces, we could say because the measure reduces. And then I would also propose putting in the current 500-foot setback prohibits oil and gas development on about 18 acres surrounding a given point. The measure increases the setback to a minimum of 2,500 feet or about 450 surrounding acres. I think I'm going to propose putting in something more than that, but that seems a little less controversial. I don't know what you all think about doing some changes like that, or if you just want to leave it the way it is.
Sort of about two-thirds of where you are, too. I think we can be a little stronger with language. I don't know that we should say things like, will decrease the amount. I mean, it seems like, I think, you know, well, I mean, that does say is expected to, is a strong word, you know. You know, it is likely, it is highly likely. So I don't know that I'm comfortable with certainty sort of on anything, but you know, like down, especially in the economics below where it sucks, potentially reduces. I mean, I think the measure constrains well location. Maybe that's what you put in your acreage point, yeah, if you want to, you know, and thus is likely to reduce future oil and gas development in the state. You know, and then, you know, the next is probably fine. Just, yeah, minor tweaks like that, I think.
Okay. Do you want to make?
I'm thinking along the same lines. I like putting in the acreage number because I think that helps give the voters some context for the magnitude of the change. I agree with not putting in specific job loss or dollar amount numbers from the study, just because I don't think we can faithfully draw those in. And I like some of the making these a little more definitive. The one I'm not sure about is the property values and health outcomes language. I don't know what to do with that sentence because there's, as I see it, there's nothing else in the initial fiscal impact statement that even addresses that. And the only place I see it mentioned is in the beginning, you know, in the kind of prefatory clause of the initiative itself. But maybe we can save that last sentence and work on some of the other.
Sure. Changes. Do you want to do basically where you're comfortable with, and then we'll move that? And,
okay.
Since we know we have kind of consensus on that.
Well, first, I mean, I think we should probably take an order. So first one is the state and local government revenues and expenditures. It sounds like I think you had something there. I was probably...
I just said, well, I mean, I'm fine with highly likely. The measure is highly likely to decrease.
Okay.
That's fine.
Do you mind redlining it, Stephen, just so we can see the...
And then the next one was under economic impact. Do we want to take out thus potentially?
Yes.
And just say reduces?
I would say is likely to reduce.
Okay, that's fine. And then we wanted to put in, I guess the rest is fine. And then we would put in the current 500 language somewhere.
Where were you planning to put that?
Well, I was thinking we put it in right after heavily populated counties, but it doesn't matter to me. Here it is, Stephen, if you want it.
Did you have language that you?
Yeah, she just gave some.
That he's typing. So he's
it came from the,
from the statement.
Yeah.
Yes. Same up above. Never mind, that's correct.
Madam Chair, do you want to comment as we go, or do you want us to wait till the end?
Oh, you can comment on this. I mean, we're going to have more to add, but right. If you have comments that's on these changes.
Sure. Okay, so I feel like I'm working on the title. So we're in line 2 where it says, or line, I guess, line 18 on the screen, where it says, particularly in heavily populated counties, given that it will essentially serve as a virtual ban on drilling in Weld County, where the vast majority of it occurs, and I would not call that a heavily populated county. I think that's a little bit misleading because the impacts are as dramatic in less populated counties as they are in populated counties. The other thing I would say is that if we're going to make the point about increasing the setback to 2,500, I think it's important to point out that it allows any local government to impose a higher requirement that will, and these are all sort of title-like issues, but that will dictate for any overlapping jurisdictions as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure that goes to the...
Well, I think that a minimum handles that issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm fine the way that is.
I think it may be a good point as the heavily, as to the heavily populated counties point, though. Because heavy population isn't as big a deal as how spread out the covered areas are going to be. You know, if you had a very loosely populated county with the homes all 5,000 feet apart, it could still cover the whole county. So I would maybe just take that whole clause out.
I agree with that. Do we want to say, since, you know, this measure constrains well location, something like throughout the state except on federal lands?
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, on the, well, it's, I mean, we are in an economic impact, so yeah. Extra description is maybe not, but it does, I think, help define the sort of the scope of it.
Do we say that in the title?
Probably.
I wonder if maybe that's a point for the title.
Yeah, maybe we talk about that when we get to the title, but. So that's all I had in this round.
Well, Jason, what do you think? Do you want that the federal lands point?
Yeah, I think here? So. I don't think it hurts to repeat it anyways.
Okay. I'm okay with it.
Where are we putting it?
I think Stephen added it in already. Oh, okay. on line 17 and 18.
Okay, so I think that is probably where we have some consensus. I'm also going to, let's make a motion to accept that, and then we'll move on.
Move that we accept the changes we've made so far.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So I'm also going to move that we take the language that Mr. Dunn has suggested about according to the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission. I'm not going to have Stephen type it because I don't think my motion is going to survive. But and then after the comma where he has measure, we would say that also included federal lands, comma. And then go from there. The measure would have resulted in a 90.2% reduction, and go on from there. But we would reference the study that it was in 2016, and I think I'm comfortable that that would give voters some. I mean, I think the voters would understand that that was a study that was done in 2016, based on this language. They would understand that. It was based on the measure becoming effective in 2017 because it says it in there, but it would give them some idea of how that measure would have had an impact. I think it's still an accurate statement. It might not be accurate for this particular measure, but it's an accurate statement that measured it at the time. And would give the voters some information about the impact. So I move that we would include that. And that dies for lack of a second. So there we go. Anybody have anything else?
No.
Well, what do you think about the last sentence?
Oh, yeah.
If we're going to jump to the last sentence, can I opine on the sentence prior to that? So I would assume, and they can speak for themselves, but the proponents would agree that the measure will reduce oil and gas development. If that's true, then the opening clause of that sentence where it says, to the extent that the measure reduces development, is unnecessary. And it could just start from there. Or adding some introductory clause, such as a result, or something like that.
So what we have now in the first sentence is it says is likely to reduce future oil and gas development. Are you saying?
My preference would be to say will.
Okay.
But where it's highlighted.
I also think to the extent, I mean, we're saying the to the extent language also goes in. It's not just saying, it doesn't just mean if. It also means that in some way, sort of proportionally to that, there will be less of these other things. I think it implies, you know, like if there's a little bit less oil and gas development, there'll be a little less oil and gas employment. If there's a lot, then there'll be a lot. And without going to too many words, I think that that has some relevance in that sense, regardless of any conditional nature on the fact of some reduction. Maybe.
Okay, then could we say something like, I'm not wed to this language, but to the same degree that the measure reduces development.
I'm interested in whether the proponents would agree that it will reduce future oil and gas development in the state.
We would not concede that because I think you don't know that yet. I think so, and I agree with Mr. Gallander that that phrase means more than, doesn't mean that it may not. It just means that it is the measurement. To the extent that it does reduce development, there will be less oil and gas employment. So I think you need that phrase. You can't just say there will be less because we don't know that yet.
Yeah, I'm fine with the language the way it is for those first few sentences.
Okay. Going on to the last one then. So where you are?
Yeah, that's where I am.
Okay.
And again, my concern with the last sentence is that other than just saying that, there's nothing in the fiscal impact statement to indicate that there is this risk of reducing property values and negatively affecting health outcomes. You know, the proponents have said that they produced studies and information to legislative council on that point. It's just not addressed anywhere in the fiscal impact statement.
Well, if I might speak to that, I mean, it is addressed in the fiscal impact statement because they've included it in the fiscal impact statement. And I think if you...
Right, just that bare sentence.
Right.
Which doesn't... It just says, to the extent it does, and says that it may, right?
Right, but that's exactly what you're going on above as well. I mean, if you remove all of the proposed benefits, you're going to be misleading the public because you're only going to talk about the negative aspects of this measure. So you will have ignored everything that the proponents have submitted. And while they had a person stand up here and testify, he was not an expert on this. He was relying on the other studies that were produced 2 years ago. So I want to make sure the record is clear that Ms. Spiegel and her credentials were equally matched to Mr. Brown's in terms of what they brought here to the podium. And I want to make sure that this body takes into account that material is before you just as it is before you with the information they have provided. And to the extent that this becomes an argument about the credibility of studies, I would submit that this body is not equipped to make those calculations here today.
Mr. Dunn, did you have anything you wanted to add to your motion as to that language?
Well, just to respond to that point, I was trying to bite my tongue, but you invited me. So you can only consider, in my view at least, what is before you. And you have the two studies, and you have the fiscal impact statement. And that's really it. To the extent Mr. Brown introduced statements that aren't part of those studies, they probably shouldn't be considered. And the same with Ms. Spiegel. As I said, this is not a evidentiary hearing. And for whatever reason, the Legislative Council chose to put some of their information online that they received and not others. And only some of it was submitted with the motion for rehearing. So I don't think that you can take ad hoc testimony about the health effects without having it seeing what it was that Legislative Council considered. I haven't seen it, so I can't even respond to it. So I'm sort of fighting with one hand tied behind my back on that particular issue. And I would suggest that you can't formulate what to say about that, having not seen it either.
I thought maybe it might be helpful to hear from Legislative Council on what they considered on that point.
I mean, I think it's pretty, yeah, I mean, we can. I think the whole thing's pretty speculative anyway, and I'm not sure. But so is the rest of it, so. I'm not really inclined to take it out, but go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Natalie Mullis with Legislative Council staff. We did look at the material that the proponents provided to us and took that into consideration when we wrote the economic impact section. We did not post it online because it was did not resemble in any way a fiscal impact statement. You know, the CU report is not a fiscal impact statement by the most technical definition either, but since it was a quantitative economic analysis, we thought it resembled it close enough to post it. I honestly would be interested in your interpretation of what we ought to post and what we ought not to post so that we're not making these decisions.
Can I ask you, were there studies or information presented to Legislative Council indicating that less oil and gas development might improve health outcomes for affected residents?
I have to be honest with you that Josh Abrams, who was the author of the fiscal note, is the one who looked through that material, not me, so I can't really speak to it.
Okay.
I know, and as Ms. Starr said, these things are speculative. I think in the absence of additional information and in the presence of testimony that Legislative Council staff did in fact look at stuff, I think at this point we defer to their judgment rather than substituting our own. And the language is it gives notice that if there's less if the setback distances increase, there may be some beneficial health outcomes. It doesn't try to quantify them. It doesn't, it's hedging language. There's may. You know, and to the extent that if it happens, may increase. I mean, I think, you know, they prepare this impact statement, and yes, we get to modify it, but I don't have absent a sort of a compelling reason that that's wrong and inaccurate and false, I would defer to it, speculative though it is. I think it's written in a way that it's not sort of inherently prejudicial or misleading. And I'd also note that the statute that they're required to follow says that the abstract must include, and there's been a little controversy, so it's not just economic impacts, but a statement of the measure's economic benefits for all Coloradans. And we've got what I think most people would say is the flip side of that above it. So I think it would be, I'm hard pressed to be convinced that we should take out the benefit side.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bothered by the squishiness of the language. To the extent it does this, it may do this, but I think I agree with Jason. I'm inclined to defer to legislative council having reviewed the information on that was provided, and this is being their best attempt to state what the economic benefits are. So although I'm a little bothered by the language, I'm comfortable leaving it in.
Okay. Then I think that's pretty much everything with the abstract.
Okay. So then I guess all the changes in, Steve?
Then. Yeah. Second.
It's not a title. I don't think we need to read it. I think I'll just move it.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right. I would move that we adopt the amendments to the fiscal fiscal abstract, that we've adopted so far, and that the abstract be modified in that manner.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to the title.
How the fun really start.
Yeah. Mr. Dunn.
So you have our objections in our motion. Let me go through those as quickly as I can. So the first one relates to the reference to new oil and gas development. The measure also applies to re-entry into existing wells. And as I understand the industry, the oil and gas wells may be plugged for a period of time for a variety of reasons, and then maybe subsequently re-entered, whether to go deeper or horizontally or when prices return. It would apply to those as well. So it has an impact not just on new oil and gas development, but existing wells as well. So the title should reflect that. Second, one of the existing provisions under state regulation through the COGCC is that a landowner, in working with a developer, may waive the current setback requirement. This measure, because it's putting the setback, the 2,500-foot setback, in law and allowing other governmental entities to increase that setback, that waiver process is no longer available. So the title really should reflect that a landowner's ability to waive the setback and allow development on their property is significant if you're a landowner, and that should be reflected in the title. Third, with regard to the phrase occupied structures, the measure actually refers to structures not just that are authorized for occupancy by a governmental entity, typically a local government, but also applies to any structure intended for human occupancy. I'm not really sure what that means, but I think you have to take it on its face and say that it's any structure that a person would occupy, not necessarily just through a governmental permitting process, because that's the first clause. So I think it needs to reflect that dramatically increases the breadth of what constitutes an occupied structure. We put in, I think somewhat of a fanciful example, but you could, in theory, count one of the 10th Mountain Division huts up in the mountains that's used for skiers as a structure intended for occupancy, and it would put the setback requirement around that. Fourth, the title does not at all reference the vulnerable areas definition and coverage, which as we show in the motion, is by far the largest portion of what is covered by the measure, and actually covers more acreage than by far than the occupied structure definition. So that should be reflected. I think we're on fifth. The title really should reflect what I talked about earlier in the single subject discussion about the change to the home rule structure of our government, and allowing that it will allow local governments to trump larger governments. It'll allow towns to trump the state. It'll allow counties to trump home rules, and that the title ought to reflect that that when another governmental entity imposes a larger setback, that would apply. And I think lastly, the title contains an impermissible catchphrase in that it says it refers to any area designated for additional protection. I think that just simply sort of presumes that that a 2,500-foot setback provides more protection than any other setback. It necessarily invites the debate about whether this is good policy or not, and may incite voters to support it without actually knowing whether the statement is true or not.
And you do not find that the phrase used in the measure "vulnerable areas" has sort of a similar connotation?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it needs to refer to that breadth of coverage. I think you're exactly right on the phrase "vulnerable," because as I said earlier, it doesn't limit it to somehow proving something is vulnerable to oil and gas development or would be harmed by it. It says that any local government can define it however it wants. So as I said, a county could come in and say, well, any city that's incorporated is a vulnerable area. So I think that's a good point about the use of the word vulnerable.
Yeah, I guess given as you're familiar with our brevity requirements, short of listing the whole laundry list, do you have a suggestion in lieu of what we've done?
I think it needs to say something about any other area that a governmental entity decides to provide to apply the setback.
So could you just say at least 2,500 feet from any occupied structure and any other area designated by a local government?
I think, well, on the first point on the occupied structure, I think you have to be careful about that because people will think of an occupied structure in the traditional way and not in the way that they've defined it by including the additional language to say it's or intended for human occupancy. So I think you have to include that, number one. And as to regard your second part of that, you know, that may cover it, but just to say simply any other area designated.
Okay. But that would leave out the ones that are designated in the measure itself, right?
In terms of vulnerable areas?
Yeah, I mean, these, whether or not the local governments would want to include these, you know, playgrounds, sports fields, public parks, et cetera, would be, you'd need to do the setback from those.
Correct.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting you should include that laundry list. I just think it's important to include the point that they can include anything they want.
Yeah. Suzanne, are you ready to hear from Ms. Tierney?
Sure. Thank you. I wanted to point out again that the Supreme Court has ruled on almost an identical title in measure number 78 in 2016 on almost these exact same issues. On number two, the title is misleading because it should reflect that it eliminates a landowner's ability to waive a setback. The measure doesn't talk at all about a waiver And in fact, in the titling process or in the review and comment process, the proponents were asked if they wanted to address that issue and opted not to. So I don't think the title should address something that the measure does not. The occupied structure language was in measure number 78, the identical definition, and it references some examples, homes, schools, and hospitals being the examples. So Mr. Dunn's example, I think, is far-fetched, and the Supreme Court found that it was not misleading in number 78, that occupied and structure are words that are easily understood by readers and would not constitute, you know, sheds and things that are not lived in or as in a school or hospital, large periods of time spent in on a daily basis. As in 78, where the language in the title was specified or locally designated area, which is what this body came up with to address the, in that measure, the word instead of vulnerable areas was slightly different. And it was areas of special concern. I actually think this title does a better job of describing what that means with areas designated for additional protection, because that's what they would be, right? Areas that are designated to fall within the 2,500-foot setback. So you could use the term vulnerable, but I think this, as you've written it, as the staff draft was written, is more descriptive and tells the voter more about what the measure does.
My only question is, I know you didn't address it, but do you believe that, I mean, when I look at subsection 3 of the measure, to me, it says, you know, it has the word all new oil and gas development on federal land must be located at least 2,500 feet. To me, that says non-waivable. And if in fact current regulation does allow waiver, whether you've addressed it or not, I think it's functionally likely to be a change in the law.
Well, the current law, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No,
I didn't mean
please.
To interrupt you. The current law says that the setback is 500 feet. It doesn't say anything about a waiver. The Oil and Gas Conservation Commission promulgated regulations providing for a waiver. So this does not differ from existing law in that way at all. And if the oil and gas industry decided to do that, I'm not sure what the result of that would be, whether there would be a challenge to that or not. But the proponents decided specifically not to address that.
Okay. Thank you.
And the issue, the fifth issue, the title is misleading because it does not indicate that the jurisdiction with the greatest distance governs. Same thing in 78. 78 had that exact same language. The Supreme Court did not find that language needed to be included in the title. And finally, any area designated for additional protection, I submit to you, is not a catchphrase. A catchphrase is something that voters will be swayed by because it is something they have heard or it is in the popular culture or in popular language, and it triggers them to vote a particular way because of that. And any area designated for additional protection does not constitute a catchphrase under the Supreme Court's definition of what a catchphrase is.
Any question?
No.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Quick response to that. So with regard to the waiver issue, the reason the waiver is allowable right now is because the setback itself is a regulation, not a statute. So the COGCC has put the setback in place, but now you'll have in state statute a setback, a mandatory setback that does not provide for any waiver. And with any reasonable interpretation, I don't see how the COGCC could come in and write a waiver to that.
Well, I don't think we generally describe in a title what there isn't in the measure. There isn't a waiver. So I'm not too inclined to include that. I am a bit sympathetic to the additional protection language. I think protection is, we all want to be protected. So I think there could be some reading into that. And so for that one, I think I would prefer the language any other area designated by a local government rather than using the word for additional protection.
I think you'd have to say, because the measure itself designates them, so I think you'd have to say, like, you know, right. any other area designated by
the measure.
The state or a local government.
Okay. That's
it's wordy,
fine, yeah.
But I think that's how you have to do it.
Yeah.
I'm also, based on Mr. Dunn's last statement, I had thought the 500 was in regulation. I wasn't sure, but assuming that is in fact the case, I would be interested in adding the word non-waivable right before statewide on the first line, because I do think that that's a significant, I mean, it is a significant change to, I guess it's not the law, current practice. I mean, if the regulation is it can be waived, and this thing says no, it can't, then I think that's worth noting. Because especially, I mean, there may be, you know, landowners out there who want to, you know, someone has, I don't know, a small farm or something, and they're just perfectly willing to let someone put a well on the outskirts from their house, and it's 1,000 feet away, and they're comfortable with that, and this measure says, no, you can't do that.
Ms. Tierney, do you agree that it's, do you dispute that it's in regulation currently?
I was just having my team go check that. I thought it was in statute already, but it may be that it is in regulation.
And would you agree under the measure that it would not allow COGCC to promulgate a regulation allowing for waiver?
I don't agree with that. I think that the COGC is going to be allowed to promulgate regulations, and there may be situations where they would be allowed to find a reason for a waiver.
Even with the must be located language in the proposed initiative?
Well, what I will say is the proponents very deliberately did not say unwaivable. And that was really a discussion. So it's certainly not contemplated that that's going to be the practice where it is now, where it isn't, where a waiver is the standard and not the exception. But I think that they purposefully chose not to address or make it non-waivable. Explicitly.
I mean, I'm fine with either way you all want to go. I just think we generally don't put, I mean, everything's, and we could put that in every measure we ever wrote. Because any law is presumably not waivable. I mean,
but in this case, it's the situation is different because there's an existing regulation that is. I mean, the existing practice is you can.
Right.
And we're having a law that I believe on the face of it, regardless of what proponents might have intended or wanted, changes that. And I think it's a significant change because you could have like a property owner who, for example, wants someone to be able to put a well on his own property that so he can, you know, get the revenue from it and now can't.
I just think that the number of people who are going to know that are the same population that are going to go actually read the initiative.
Well,
I just don't know who in the general public believes laws are just waivable and that we have to just say that they're not waivable.
But
I don't know.
Let me just add one more point, and that's that I think the Supreme Court has been consistent in its direction that the title should not have to spell out what the measure's effect on all or any other laws is.
So what if we took the word distance off the beginning of line three and added must before be located? So, you know, we're not saying non-waivable, and we're just using the near the end there, right before be located, and we're just using the must from the initiative. I don't know if that helps with your concern, Jason, or not.
Sure, well, it's a nice, more pleasant word than non-waivable. So there's that.
If I may,
sure.
I'm not huge on either one. I don't think must really advances the ball any. And I agree that non-waivable, just putting right before statewide minimum distance requirement, is not clear who would be doing the waiving. I would propose that we say a change to Colorado by statute concerning a statewide minimum distance requirement for new oil and gas development that will no longer be waivable by landowners. I mean, to respond to the statement that who knows that these are waivable? I can promise you the landowners who have mineral rights know what's waivable and what's not.
And I haven't seen the regulation. That's who it says waives it. It's essentially whoever has the structure that's subject to the setback is the person who does the waiving.
Correct.
It's more words than I'd like, but I would be in favor of that.
Would you like me to restate that?
Yes, please.
On line two, after development, that will no longer be waivable by landowners.
I'm going to give Steve back this.
I think you were right.
Yeah, I think he was too. One of the drivers here.
Again, I just think that's not what the measure says. And I think it's debatable that that's what the measure does. So I think it's misleading.
All right. Well, how about this? I think we're good with it. Why don't I move that particular language? Because I think we may have disagreement among us on it. So I move we adopt the language that's been added on line two.
We have a ruling on the spelling of waivable.
I don't know if there's an E or not.
It might be moot, but I'm quite curious, actually.
I'll Google it for you while we see if he gets a second.
It's been a while.
Then we won't know. We won't need to know.
Yeah, I'm not going to second.
Okay, all then right. We don't need to know.
That concept. Not only the motion, but I think the concept appears to be lost as well. So is there anything else we're considering adding?
No. I don't think waivable is a word, though. Except in Wiktionary.
So I did, Mr. Dunn's argument on the occupied structure did resonate with me, because I do think just reading that, you would assume that meant it had to be occupied. And I think the, meaning there had to be a person living there at the time. And I think the definition is broader. So I would, instead of occupied structure, I would say structure intended for human occupancy. Not that I love that language, but it's, I think it's a little more accurate.
You could go with habitable.
Oh, that's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, tent is habitable.
What do you think of that change?
I think the Supreme Court thought that it was fine the way it was, but, you know, it's a different board. If you all want to improve upon the language.
If I might, I might say that if you make that change, we would push for the rest of that part of the definition then that says including homes, schools, and hospitals. So that it's not the shed in the woods.
Well, I mean, this is just the language from the measure, so.
Right, but that's modified by including homes, schools, and hospitals, right? So it's giving the measure the context that that's the type of occupied structures or structures intended for human occupancy that are regulated.
Yeah, I mean, the others may feel differently, but I would make this change and not add the home, schools, hospitals.
You want to make a motion and see if you get a second?
Sure. All right, I move that we change the language on line four from occupied, just the first part of that, from occupied structure to, say, structure intended for human occupants.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll be opposed just because I was on the board for the first language.
Oh, I may well have been, too.
I don't know. Anything else?
So as we have it up there right now, I'm worried that it talks about the structure and, oh, I guess we have other area designated by the measure.
Yeah.
That's the concept that I was, do we need to flesh that out and indicate something about what those are? I know it's hard because we have that long listing in the measure.
I would leave it as is. I think it's time to move on.
I'll second that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to just read it the way it is right now. This is a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a statewide minimum distance requirement for new oil and gas development and connection therewith. Changing existing distance requirements to require that any new oil and gas development be located at least 2,500 feet from any structure intended for human occupancy in any other area designated by the measure, the state, or a local government, and authorizing the state or a local government to increase the minimum distance requirement.
Ready?
Yes.
I would move that we grant the motion for rehearing only to the extent that we've amended the title, as was just read into the record.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. Okay.
So I have one question for the board before we continue. You also chose to amend the fiscal abstract.
Uh-huh.
So how, since this is new for us, how do we note that on the result? Motion for rehearing granted to the extent, only to the extent that the fiscal abstract and titles were amended?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I need. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good catch. Okay. Can we take five?
Sure. We're going to take five. are back on the record. And the next item is 2018, number 108, just compensation for whatever.
My proponent sits here for 6 hours and then disappears.
Well, maybe it was a deliberate act. Nope. You want to just, you don't have to bring them up if you want to just state for
sure.
The record.
For the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of the proponents and the designated representatives, Chad Borthman and Michelle Smith are here and they have completed their notarized affidavits.
Okay. And Mr. Dunn, do you want to just start out, tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
Sure. So we're on 108, I believe.
Yes.
The single subject is simply to amend the definition of the constitutional definition of taking.
Okay. And anybody have any questions on single subject? Someone want to make a motion?
I move that we find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 108 has a single subject and will give jurisdiction instead of title.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Aye.
Can I ask real quickly, there are two typographical errors that I caught. They're Scrivener errors, and I think the board has authority to amend the measure to fix those. So I think it's one. Where it says Section 1 in the Constitution of the State of Colorado, amend Section 15 of Article, I should say 2. I don't know why there's a line across there or if that's an H. But
okay.
And then in the measure itself, on the second line, it should say or damaged instead of damaged.
You get those, Steve? Probably not.
Article H changed to Article 2, and of changed to or. If you can email me an updated copy of this text on the technical corrections the board just made.
We haven't made them yet. But
when we read through your petition, we have a clear copy of what it's supposed to say.
Okay. Someone want to move those?
I'm sorry, the technical
changes?
Yes, I move that we adopt the Scrivener error technical changes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Somebody want to make a motion, or Mr. Dunn, you want to comment on whether this is an addition to the Constitution or merely a repeal?
It is an addition.
Okay. Someone want to make that motion?
I move that we find that the proposed initiative 2718 number 108 does more than merely repeal language from the Constitution that requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to the title, I believe. Do you have any comments on the title?
I have nothing to say.
Wow. I was going to suggest that maybe we could simplify it a little bit and take out the concerning and then just say an amendment to the Constitution requiring that the government provide an award or provide compensation. I don't know what people know what just compensation.
Your tweak a little.
Go ahead. Yeah.
How about simply requiring a governmental body?
How about the government?
Or government. Yeah. Requiring the government to award just compensation to an owner of private property, et cetera.
I wasn't big on the word just compensation. Can we just say compensation?
I don't think so, because it's like a term of art.
Yeah, but you mean they just have to provide compensation? I don't know. I just think it could be, I don't know, read sort of strange by somebody.
I would use the legalese in this one. I mean, I can be outvoted on it, but I would stick with the legalese.
Okay. I'd probably leave the just.
All right. You okay with that, Mr. Dunn?
We are.
Okay. All right. Then, as it reads right now, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution requiring the government to award just compensation to owners of private property when a government law or regulation reduces the fair market value of the property.
I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18, number 108, as we've amended it, and it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to 2017-2018, number 109. Go ahead.
Do you want my whole admonition or a disclaimer on designated representatives?
If you could just state for the record.
Okay. For the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of designated representatives Michelle Smith and Chad Borthman, who are here and have turned in their notarized affidavits.
And can you tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
The single subject is to amend what constitutes damaged in the constitutional definition of taking.
And any questions? No. Make a motion on the single subject.
Move that we fund, the board finds that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 109 has a single subject and we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. You have any errors?
No, okay. I do not.
How about the addition? Agree it's an addition?
I do.
Okay. Want to make that motion?
Oh, sorry. I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 109 adds language to the Colorado Constitution, thus requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, that takes us to the title. Have any comments on the title, Mr. Dunn?
I don't.
You have any changes?
I think this is another one we can dispense with a concerning if we want to.
Okay.
And what I was proposing is just saying an amendment to the Colorado Constitution establishing that property is damaged, comma, requiring just compensation, comma, and then continue with when a government law regulation, and from then on, as is in the thing. Staff draft, I guess, not the thing.
Mr. Dunn, you have any comment?
Could we say private property in the first line, establishing that private property?
I think we're okay with that.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't know about switching the order around a little bit, but I don't know. If you don't mind the comma separating it. You're fine with it? All right, I'll read it. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution establishing that private property is damaged, requiring just compensation when a government law or regulation reduces the fair market value of the property by 10% or more.
Great. I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 109 as we've amended it and now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That takes us to 110. Mr. Dunn.
For the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of designated representatives Michelle Smith and Chad Borthman, who have turned in their notarized affidavits.
You want to tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
most simply to amend the constitutional definition of a taking.
Okay. And any questions on single subject? Make a motion.
Yes, I move that the board find that proposed initiative 2017-18, number 110, has a single subject, and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. You agree this is an addition?
Yes.
Okay.
I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18, number 110, adds language to the Colorado Constitution and requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That takes us to the language. You have any changes?
I don't think so.
Okay. Jason?
This sort of concerning when private property thing is a little awkward, but I haven't figured out anything better yet, so it depends on if everyone's happy with it. It's probably...
You have anything, Glenn?
Can we not do the same thing we did on the last one here? And just cut it down. Declaring a property, cut out most of the first and second lines.
Well, the problem with taking out concerning is that it does have a couple other provisions.
Yeah. Concerning governmental taking of private property?
That'd be fine. You okay with that? Because... it just seems strange to repeat all of that in the trailer. It's like they were trying to capture the trailer and then trailed it anyway.
Yeah.
And you can get rid of, or do you want to say that requires?
I probably would take it out.
Yeah, I think we'd take it out. Do we need to say a property, or can we just say property? Declaring property is damaged? I don't know.
Declaring that property is damaged.
Yeah. Instead of a, Steve, can we do that on line 3?
Okay. Sorry. Give me one sec.
I think it's probably a missing space after property.
That's what I was trying to fix here. One moment. So repeat that change.
Just
taking off a private property?
Yeah, on line 3. Change it from a. No, on line 3. Take out the a, declaring. What was it?
That.
So I do have a question for Mr. Dunn. This one says shall be deemed damaged, whereas the earlier one said is damaged. Is that intended to be a substantive difference?
It's not.
Okay, I'll go ahead and read it. It's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning government taking of private property and in connection therewith, declaring that property is damaged when a government law or regulation reduces the fair market value of the property by prohibiting or restricting uses that were allowed at the time the owner acquired title to the property and requiring the compensation award to equal the difference in the market value before and after the effective date of the law or regulation.
One thing I do is on line 6, instead of saying the compensation award, because we haven't sort of referred to it above like it had in the staff draft, I would say compensation for the damage.
Fine.
That's it.
Okay. All right. You want to move the whole thing?
Yeah. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18, number 110, as we've amended it, and it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 111. Mr. Dunn?
For the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of designated representatives Michelle Smith and Chad Borthman, who have signed and notarized their affidavit and turned those in and are here.
And what do you believe the single subject of your measure to be?
It's to amend the constitutional, I should say description instead of definition, the constitutional description of when a taking occurs.
Okay. Any questions on single subject?
No. I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 111 has a single subject and that the board has a jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And do you agree this is an addition?
I do.
Okay. Make that motion.
I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 111 adds language to the Colorado Constitution and requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All
right.
It takes us to the language. Do you have anything, Mr. Dunn?
In terms of the measure itself?
No. The language?
No.
No. You have any changes, Jason? Or Glenn? Or...
Let's see.
We could do, again, concerning government taking of private property.
Yeah.
I think you can take that all the way through the comma. And then I would probably take out on line 4 by the state or any government entity or agency. I think that's kind of assumed.
Right. All right, so right now it reads an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning government taking of private property and in connection therewith declaring that property is taken for use by the public whenever the implementation of any law or regulation causes a reduction in the fair market value of property for uses that were allowed at the time the property owner acquired title to the property.
Could I ask, Mr. Dunn, is this measure intended to mean that if the fair market value is reduced at all, that the entire property is deemed taken and requires just compensation for the entire property? Because it doesn't say anything about how you calculate the compensation and that being equivalent to the reduction in fair market value.
I believe it would be the, as it would be today, on a regulatory taking, but it would be the equivalent of the reduction in fair market value.
Okay, so it's not intended to mean that if the fair market value is reduced, then you treat it as if it's zero and the government has to
Correct.
Pay for the full value?
The only question I have is just for word shortening is, I know it tracks the language of the measure, but is there any reason to not just say for public use instead of for use by the public?
I'm sorry, was that a question
I like
for
that.
Me?
Sorry, on line 3, it was just... I'd rather say for public use instead of for use by the public, but for use by the public is what the measure has. If there's some like case law distinction or difference that matters.
No.
Okay.
All right. You want to move the language?
Sure. I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 111 as we've amended it and it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, that takes us to 2017-2018, number 112. Mr. Dunn.
Jason Dunn, on behalf of designated representatives Michelle Smith and Chad Borthman, who have turned in their notarized and signed affidavit and are here today.
Any questions on single subject? Or why don't you tell us what you think the single subject of your measure is?
The single subject is to amend the constitutional description of when a governmental taking occurs.
Any questions?
No.
You want to make a motion?
I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 112 has a single subject and we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And do you agree that this is an addition?
Yes.
Okay.
I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 112 adds language to the Colorado Constitution and therefore requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That takes us to the language. Any comments, Mr. Dunn?
No.
No. Okay. So let's do the same single subject. And let's strike that whole state or government entity who's enacting the law.
So on line four, by the state or any government entity or agency. Yeah. So I wanted to ask Mr. Dunn, what is a regulatory condition?
I knew someone was going to ask that. It's really just an attempt to be all-encompassing, to make sure that there was nothing that wouldn't be covered by a change in regulatory policy or something else that wasn't as formal as a regulation or statute.
Hmm. Like a policy?
Do you have an example on the top of your head?
I don't.
Okay. I don't have anything else.
Just out of curiosity, just because. So the date of the measurement is actually like the day the law changes. So like this has to be something where it really is, because it doesn't explicitly require this compensation to be tied to, specifically tied to the law, regulation, or regulatory condition. So I guess I'm saying is, if on date X, there's some regulation is passed, and also on date X, I don't know, the house across the street from some guy is has a huge SWAT raid because they've been running meth labs or something like that. They're not going. This measure is not going to get them paid. Is that accurate?
I would assume that a court determining just compensation would factor that in.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Right now it reads an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning government taking a private property and in connection therewith declaring that property is damaged when the enactment of a law, regulation, or regulatory condition limits or prevents the property from being used for a purpose that was allowed at the time the property owner acquired title, and requiring the compensation award to equal the difference in the fair market value of the property before and after the effective date of the law, regulation, or regulatory condition.
So, Jason, you had a suggestion on the other one about the compensation.
Oh, right. Requiring the compensation, I believe it was compensation for damages. Did this one say, yeah, I think that's what we said, whatever we said before. The first or second.
I don't remember which one that was.
It was either the first or the second.
Maybe 110.
And the compensation for the damage.
Okay, I have nothing else.
Okay, you want to make a motion?
Yes. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 112 as we've amended it and now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018 number 113. Mr. Dunn?
Jason Dunn on behalf of designated representatives Michelle Smith and Chad Borthman, who have signed and notarized their affidavits and turned those in and are here today.
And you want to tell us a single subject of your mission?
single subject is to amend the constitutional description of when a taking occurs requiring just compensation.
And any questions on single subject?
No.
I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 113 has a single subject and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. And do you agree this is an addition?
I do.
Okay. I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 113 adds language to the Colorado Constitution and therefore requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anything on the language?
No.
No. All right. Jason? We use the same, yeah.
I think all the way through compensation, Stephen.
It was neat. It keeps the comma.
And then whenever a law, so I think you can cut out the state or any government entity or agency enacts.
I think we have then, to do is enacted after condition. So, no, wait, what was it?
And then take out that.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Or is it the enactment of? Do we need that concept in there?
I think we do, because otherwise it would just be, it could be existing law.
Right.
So after whenever, we say whenever the enactment of. So right now it reads an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning government taking a private property and in connection therewith declaring that property is taken for public use whenever the enactment of a law, regulation, or regulatory condition causes a reduction in the fair market value of the property for uses that were allowed at the time the property owner acquired title to the property.
Excellent. You good?
Yeah.
All right, I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 113 as we've amended it and now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, that takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018 at number 119.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Well, hello again.
Hello.
Martha Tierney.
It's Groundhog
Day. Here on behalf of the proponents, David Silverstein and Andrew Graham, who are present and have signed their affidavits previously today.
And Ms. Tierney, you want to tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure to be?
We're starting with
119.
Thank you. The single subject of the measure is transparency in healthcare insurance pricing.
Right. Any questions on the single subject? Right. You want to make a motion? Okay.
None for me.
Yeah.
All right. I would move that the board find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 119 has a single subject and that we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to the title. Do you have any comments on the title, Ms. Tierney?
So I have just a few. It seems like, and before I forget, I have a Scrivener's error that I would like to bring to your attention, and that is it will follow through to each of these measures. And let me just find it. I apologize. I have it highlighted. Here it is. Okay, it's in nope, it's not in this one. It's in 121, 122, and 123, so my apologies.
Oh, no problem.
I'll bring it up when we get to those.
Okay.
It seems as though there are some parallel construction things that we might improve upon. So we've got publicly disclose in line 3 and line 4, but then in line 5, I think that the phrase starting detailed coverage and negotiated payment information also needs to be publicly disclosed. So I don't know if we say publicly disclose once and list the items. It's more of a
I think that's probably
a parallel structure issue, and maybe that would make it easier to read. Because all of the things in that list, detailed coverage and negotiated payment information by plan type and provider is one, prescription drug prices negotiated with providers is, all of that has to be publicly disclosed. And so we either list, we say publicly disclose at the front and list them all out, or we say publicly disclose before each one, which seems maybe redundant.
I mean, I think we should do it once, don't you?
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah.
Right, and that was my sense as well.
Okay.
So, and I've seen us, I'm here too much, you, the title board, break down titles that way before. It's not super common, but you have done it where you've done like a, you know, one in paren, the basis for determining payment or reimbursement amounts to healthcare providers. Two, the items that appear as charges on explanation of benefits that the insurer does not pay. Three, detailed coverage and negotiated payment information by plan type and provider. Four, prescription drug prices negotiated with providers, pharmacies, distributors, and manufacturers. I think
five.
All forms of remuneration derived from rebates or other incentives. Those would
five.
Right, and then we would, and then we can.
Yeah.
Authorizing penalties would be a different.
Okay. What do you all think of that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, we can. It's tough because with all the commas in there, we should probably be doing some semicolons. Otherwise, and that makes it kind of scurry. So the numbering is that the theory that the numbering sort of clarifies.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Fine by me.
Is that a comprehensive list of everything that's required? Because if we put numbers on it.
Is that a comprehensive list? There's no other category.
That's a comprehensive list.
Okay.
Yes, that's a
that's a comprehensive list.
Okay.
There, let me raise one other point. On in section 3 of the measure, where it lists out all the things that have to be posted, there is also sort of a catch-all that says, or it's under 2A1, and it says whether the payment is based on a percentage of the provider's charges, a flat daily or per diem rate, co-payments, deductibles, or any other factor, variable, or system devised and not listed here that is used for determining the payment. I don't know that we need all of that, but we may need some summary of that so that we don't, to Mr. Roper's point, make it look as though it is a comprehensive list. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for.
So is there a sort of catch-all phrase we could put on that category without saying all those things?
And is what we have up there, maybe I'm not understanding, is what we have under number one, doesn't that cover it?
I think so.
Yeah, maybe it does. Okay. Yeah. I think you're right. And it's general enough that it's not, you know, it's all encompassing.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Okay. On line 7, could we just call that all forms of payment from rebates or other incentives? Do we really have to say? Derived.
Yes, because that word is a terrible word. We all, I think we all say it remuneration instead of remuneration.
Yeah.
Let's.
I don't want to have to read
it. I don't want that on the ballot.
It's not me having to read it right now.
Can you just say all rebates or other incentives?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't even think we need
all rebates or other incentives is perfect.
Yeah. All right, so right now it is a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a requirement that healthcare insurers publish health insurance plan information and in connection therewith requiring health insurers to publicly disclose, one, the basis for determining payment or reimbursement amounts to healthcare providers, two, the items that appear as charges on an explanation of benefits that the insurer does not pay, three, detailed coverage and negotiated payment information by plan type and provider, four, prescription drug prices negotiated with providers, pharmacies, distributors, and manufacturers, and five, all rebates or other incentives, authorizing penalties for violation, including licensee discipline and civil fines, and prohibiting any contract between a health insurance plan and a health care provider to restrict publishing the required health insurance plan information.
So I would probably say on line 9, prohibiting any contract from restricting at the end.
Yeah.
Instead of prohibiting to restrict. And then you get restricting and publishing right after each other, but I think it's.
Restrictions on publishing.
Restrictions
on publishing.
Restricting the publication either
restrictions on publishing or restricting the publication of.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just works on line 8 where it says licensee discipline. You know, we haven't said anything like, I mean, about who a licensee is previously. Authors of penalties and violations, including, I might say, I think we used insurer. I don't think we said carrier either. I think we used insurer above, which I think is fine, including revocation of insurer licenses or something like that.
What it says in the measure is revocation or suspension of.
You look at revocation or suspension of insurer licenses or too much.
Seems like a lot of words.
Okay.
Can't we just do insurer discipline in civil fund? Or do we need to even say what it is? Can we just say penalties for violence? Who else is going to be penalized but the insurer?
And can we just end it at violations?
Authorizing penalties for violations. Yeah.
Works
for
me.
Okay. All right. Going to move the language?
Sure. We're all good.
I am.
I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 119 as we've amended it and now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That takes us to number initiative 2017-2018 number 120, transparency in prescription drug prices.
Martha Tierney, on behalf of the proponents, David Silverstein and Andrew Graham, who are both present and have signed their affidavits.
And do you want to tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure to be?
The single subject of this measure is transparency in pharmacy pricing.
Any questions on the single subject?
No.
Make a motion to
move the board finally proposed initiative 2017-18 number 120 has a single subject and we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And you want to tell us what your error is?
No, it's in the it's
next
in
one.
The okay. Next one.
All right. So any comments on the language?
On the of the proposed title, is that what we're on?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Only we could make the same change that we made in the last time, authorizing penalties for violations, if you want to shorten that part up. Otherwise, I think we're good.
Okay, so right now it reads a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a requirement that pharmacies publish a list of the retail prices the pharmacies charge before any price adjustment, and in connection therewith, require pharmacies to promptly update the list of drug prices and maintain records regarding retail drug prices, and authorizing penalties for violations.
Is there a reason why line 3 says require and not requiring?
No, it probably should to be parallel, huh?
Yeah.
Or we could have them both. Require and authorize should be the same, either requiring and authorizing or require and authorize. Right?
Yeah.
Make it requiring.
And authorize more. What do you want to do?
Requiring.
Requiring, yeah. Okay. What about, do we need to say again that it's the pharmacies that are charging it? Can we just say publish a list of the retail prices before any price adjustment?
Or their retail prices?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I had was their
okay.
retail prices.
On line two, Stephen?
So just their...
Publish a list of their...
I should say retail drug prices. That's okay. What the measure says, and we have it down below.
Okay.
Is the before any price adjustment central?
I don't think so.
We don't think it's central to.
Yeah. Okay. No. So let's strike that too. So now it's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a requirement that pharmacies publish a list of their retail drug prices and in connection therewith requiring pharmacies to promptly update the list of drug prices and maintain records regarding retail drug prices and authorizing penalties for violations.
Is there the last and on line three, do we need that? Shouldn't there be a comma there requiring pharmacies to promptly update the list of drug prices, maintain records regarding retail drug prices? Oh, no, maybe it does. Maybe you do need it. No, never mind.
Probably strike the whole clause, really.
I would also just take out of drug prices, though, because I think you just say promptly update the list. We just reference
yeah.
it.
Publish a list and in connection therewith promptly update the list. Yeah.
Okay. Maintain records. I know it's dumb, but after regard, is it their retail drug prices or is it something? Is it just theirs that they keep records of?
It's not all of them.
All changes to its. Maintain records of all changes to the list.
So we would say regarding their retail drug prices?
In yeah. records of all. I'd say. Promptly update the list and maintain records of changes made. I think that's what it actually requires, unless. I think that's okay.
Okay, I think that's fine.
Okay. You want to move the changes?
Sure. I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 120 as we've amended it. It now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018 number 121.
And this is the one where we do have Martha Tierney on behalf of proponents, David Silverstein and Andrew Graham, who are present and have both signed their affidavits. And there is a Scrivener's error in this measure on...
Is it 3A?
It's 3A. It reads, a healthcare provider is not B required. So the B was supposed, used to say shall not be, and we took out the shall and made it is at the direction of the Ledge Council. But the B was erroneously left in. So the BE.
Where are we?
It's on, Stephen, it is on page.
The fourth page
four,
of the.
3A. You see it?
So we're just striking the B in that?
Yes. So it should read a healthcare provider is not required to publish.
Got it.
And Jason, you want to make that motion, and then we'll go to single subject.
Well, I prefer not to. Sorry,
not?
Herman Melville reference, but sure.
Will you make that motion?
I move that we fix the Scrivener's error on page four, first line of paragraph 3A, by deleting the word B.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. And what is the single subject of your measure?
The single subject of this measure is transparency in healthcare pricing.
Okay. And any questions on single subject board? And will one of you make a motion?
Well, I actually do have a couple single subject questions. So there where we are on page 4, underneath 3A, I guess down in section 5, where it requires publishing a list of all persons providing health care services. What is the connection of that to providing information on pricing?
Yes. And I'm going to have David Silverstein address that point.
Thank you, Martha. In many cases, especially in the case of hospitals, a patient is hit with different pricing because they're seeing multiple providers. So you go into an emergency room, and the emergency room physician is an independent physician, isn't employed by the hospital, and because the patient doesn't know that, they are not privy to the correct pricing. They don't know what pricing to refer to. In today's world, they can't get the pricing at all. Very often, you'll go in for surgery, and the anesthesiologist is going to bill you separately from the surgeon. Or in the case of somebody who's in the hospital because they broke their hip, and the doctor says, gee, I think you broke your hip because you're a drug addict, and they send an addiction counselor to see them, but that addiction counselor doesn't work for the hospital. So knowing the relationship is paramount and to obtain transparent pricing, because otherwise you don't know whose pricing you should be looking at.
Okay.
Anything else?
Yeah, then under I guess just globally, this includes this is kind of the omnibus measure that includes the healthcare provider and the insurer and the pharmacy all in one.
Yes, this one and 123.
Okay, what did you say the single subject was again? Tying those together?
Transparency in healthcare pricing.
Okay.
We good for a motion?
Yeah, I think so. I'll just say I think I'm probably okay with single subject, although it's potentially an issue. I'll just see if there's a rehearing motion on it.
All right. I would move that the board find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 121 has a single subject, and we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That takes us to the title, and so can we do the same numbering?
Yes, I think that would help.
So number one.
Well, this is not sort of the same kind of series as that other one had.
So can we not do that?
Because I don't think there's any list that's more than like two things.
Yeah,
it probably doesn't lend itself now that we look at it a little bit closer. I apologize too. We just got these staff drafts today, so we're looking at them at the same time as you are. I mean, I think there's some extraneous language in here for sure. So on line...
On line 3... We probably don't need to say before adjustments, right?
Yes.
Detailing the price charged for healthcare services.
Comma. Billing policies, and a list of healthcare professionals providing services.
Do we need to itemize the patient bills, or do we just need to prohibit the non-complying healthcare providers? Those seem like two different things.
Yeah, I don't think we need that to itemize patient bills. We just need
prohibiting.
To prohibit non-complying healthcare providers from billing patients.
Should we just say patients? Should we say third-party payers?
We don't.
I mean.
Or we could just say billing. Billing for the service.
From billing for the service. How about from billing for the service?
Yes.
Okay.
I do have a more sort of fundamental issue.
Yeah.
It's a single subject. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. I was looking at the wrong one.
Okay.
Never mind.
Do you want the next clause requiring healthcare providers to inform patients about acceptance of and coverage of healthcare services?
I don't think that needs to be in the title.
Okay. I think the next clause is fine. What do you think of that one?
I mean, that the next clause sort of covers the clause before that. Yeah. So I think.
And then we are fine with the pharmacies, I would think, right? So then we get to authorizing penalties for violations, and we would strike, including licensee discipline and civil fines. And then we would what did we say? I'm prohibiting any contract from restricting or something?
Restricting from restricting publication of, I think, on line 11.
Yeah.
Second half there, Stephen. Leave what is there. Yeah. So where it says to restrict publishing, change it to from restricting publication of.
Right.
Yeah, that looks good.
So right now it reads, a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the disclosure of health care pricing information and in connection therewith, requiring health care providers to publish fee schedules detailing the price charged for health care services, billing policies, and a list of health care professionals providing services, prohibiting non-complying health care providers from billing for the service, requiring health insurers to publicly disclose coverage and payment information for each health coverage plan and information regarding incentives received by the insurer, requiring pharmacies to publish retail drug prices, authorizing penalties for violation, and prohibiting any contract between a health insurance plan and a health care provider from restricting publication of the required health care price information. Is that how we had that language? Was it the contract between the health insurance plan and the healthcare provider, or did we just say contract? We said all that? Okay, that's fine. Do you think we could say and list of healthcare instead of professionals providing on line 4, could we collapse that to providers, healthcare provider? Oh, wait a minute. I guess that doesn't save us anything. I don't know.
I think it's a list of who provided the services.
Never mind. Yeah. Okay. Right. Anyone have anything else?
Four.
Proponents are fine. Okay.
Just on line 5, again, where it says the service, that sort of doesn't go back to anything. And it's, I'm pretty sure it's from subsection 7, the measure on page 5, where it says if a patient receives a health care service and the health care provider has failed to publish its fee schedule, et cetera, then they're not, they can't bill for it. It just doesn't read right.
Billing for the service, is that what you're looking at?
Yeah.
What about a service or
their services?
Or services provided. Because
it really is. It's something that's like, you know, prohibiting providers from billing for services
rendered
without publication or something. But it's the non-complying, it's sort of, well, let's say, requiring. Yeah, maybe just for billing for maybe just say services, or
services rendered. I don't know if we need both billing for the services. Services rendered.
Just services.
Just maybe. Services.
Yeah, I think that's just a little better. It just doesn't look like it relates back to something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
So now it relates back to the services above in 4.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
We think the itemized billing is, and sorry if I missed something, is important enough to be included.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, better in a lump sum, probably, I guess.
Has that been in previous ones too that we haven't put it in? If so, then that's fine. Let's just go.
Okay. Do you want to move it then?
Sure. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 121 as we've amended it and it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. That takes us to proposed initiative number 122. And Ms. Tierney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents of proposed initiative 122, David Silverstein and Andrew Graham, who are both present and have signed their affidavits.
Right, and you want to make the same?
Yes, the same Scrivener's error, and in this one it is, it's same 3A. A healthcare provider, right now it reads a healthcare provider is not B, and we wanted to just say is not required.
Do you want to move that?
Well, sure. I move that we fix the Scrivener's error in subsection on page 1-4 of the proposed initiative, well, first line of subsection 3A. By removing the word B.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That takes us to single subject. What do you believe the single subject of your measure to be?
The single subject of the measure is transparency in healthcare provider pricing.
Okay. Any questions from the board on single subject?
No.
Okay. Like
I move that we find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 122 has a single subject and that the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
So I think this is kind of a cut and paste of all of our other ones. So requiring healthcare providers to publish fee schedules detailing the price charged for healthcare services, we could take out before applying any adjustments. And say billing policies and a list of healthcare professionals providing services, and to itemize patient billing, prohibiting non-complying healthcare providers from billing patients, or I think we just stopped it there, right? Billing patients.
Did we take out and to itemize patient bills from the other one?
I thought we didn't.
Do you have?
We did. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay, we did. Okay, so take that out.
Prohibiting.
And then there, I think in 5 and 6, it should just say from billing for services.
Right. So patients or third party payers comes out.
I guess we didn't ask, is the intention to just submit one of these five? Well, I guess not necessarily. Maybe you'd want to have the pharmacy and the carrier and the...
Right. We would not, if we submit one of the omnibus measures, the 121 or 123, we would only submit one. And if we submit one of those, that would be the only measure we submit. But if we go with the separate ones, it's possible that we could submit
in
the
separate.
If I can just add to that, there is only one purpose for all of this. However, the legislature has a parallel version of this, and should they only take care of part of the problem, then the intent is to have measures that would take care of the rest of the problem.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Right now, it's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the disclosure of healthcare provider pricing information and in connection therewith requiring healthcare providers to publish fee schedules detailing the price charged for healthcare services, billing policies, and a list of healthcare professionals providing services, prohibiting non-complying healthcare providers from billing for services, requiring healthcare providers to inform patients about the acceptance and coverage of healthcare services under the patient's insurance, and prohibiting any contract between a health insurance plan and a healthcare provider from restricting publication of required healthcare price information.
Good to go?
Okay. Yep.
All right. I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 122 as we've amended it and now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. That takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018 number 123.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents, David Silverstein and Andrew Graham, who have signed their affidavits and are present here today. We have the same Scrivener error.
Do you want to make, will you make that motion, Jason?
Yes, I have to find it so I know where to say where it is. Okay. I move that we fix the identified Scrivener error by removing the word B on page 14 of the proposed initiative's first line of subsection 3A.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
All right. That takes us to single subject. What do you believe the single subject of your measure to be?
The single subject is transparency in healthcare pricing.
I could just ask, how is this one different from 121?
So I was expecting that question. The difference, there is only a very small difference, and it is in section Here it is.
Starting on page 6.
Oh, yeah, because this is 123. Oh, no, this is 121. Yes, 123. 123 adds a term to the section 4. Is that where I am?
Manufacturers.
Yeah, but it's, I thought it was in 121, but I'm not finding it.
To do with the rebates.
I don't feel so bad that I couldn't find it.
I think it might be in the.
So could I point out a couple and maybe
hold on.
Let me know if there's
yeah, sure.
more? So on page 6 of 123, in section 3 that begins, each carrier shall publish annually.
Yes, that's what it is. That's right. Because it's the carrier's publishing the rebates.
There's some slight differences in the language in that paragraph. It doesn't have the remuneration term, and then the non-proprietary aggregated information, that's described a little bit differently.
But that's not what I meant.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
On that same page in 6, where it says negotiated with providers, pharmacies, or distributors, Section 123 also includes manufacturers.
Right. Yes, that's the key difference. And
it all has to do with rebates from pharmaceutical manufacturers to insurance carriers. And because there's still discussions going on between the legislature and us and the pharmaceutical industry, we have both versions. Only one will ever be pursued towards the ballot.
Then under Section 4, where it says 620106, says retail drug prices in a form and manner determined by the board. Section 121 says by rule. 123 does not. Yeah. And then finally, under subpart A in that section, the description of the form that it needs to be provided in is a little bit differently. 123 refers to a printed form. 121 talks about printed, hard copy, or electronic substitute.
Right. Yep.
So should we put up 121? And then is there anything in 123 that he just read that's...
Title. I don't know that any of them is substantively different that would affect the title.
We agree with that.
Then as long as you agree, you won't circulate more than one.
We definitely will not be circulating both 121 and 123.
Okay. Then are we okay with the language from 121?
Yeah.
Right. So one thing on that point about circulating more than one petition, our office recently encountered an event where we were asked to approve more than one petition format. Under the idea that only one of those would be circulated. So if we can, we'd also like to get a commitment, if possible. It would be very helpful for us to only get one petition format approved, as opposed to getting multiple formats approved and then deciding which one you choose to circulate.
Yes, that's fine.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. With that being done, I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18, number 123, as it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that takes us to the ratification of the title board's participation in the appeal of proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 66. I won't make the motion since I am going to vote no. Somebody else like to make that motion?
I move that we participate in, where were we at, the appeal, the ongoing litigation of proposed initiative 2017-18-19, number 66.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. All right, and that takes us to a motion that we go into executive session under 24-6-402, is that right? 24-6? Yes, 402, to receive legal advice about the appeals participation process. We will come back into session only to adjourn. So that will then conclude our business.
Do you need a second?
Oh, yes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I mumbled aye.
Oh, okay.